This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new movie Sankofa is perhaps the first film about slavery in America made by an African. The writer, director, producer Haile Gerima is from Ethiopia. He came to the States in 1967 at the age of 21 to study at the Goodman School of Drama, and he decided to stay in America and make independent films. He describes his new film as addressing the problem of people in the African diaspora who neglect their own history. Sankofa begins on the coast of Ghana, where an African-American model is on a fashion shoot. She's oblivious to the fact that the castle behind her was used centuries ago to storehouse captured Africans about to be sent on slave ships to America. She enters the castle and is magically transported back into time and sent into slavery to learn her tragic history. Gerima is distributing the film himself. It's opened in several cities and opens in a Harlem theater on Friday. Gerima says that slavery wasn't taught in Ethiopian history classes. He learned about it in America. He told me about his early experiences as an African in America.
When I came in contact with African Americans, I was having a problem of identification. On one hand, I wanted to be different from them. On another hand, I continued to gravitate, or at least they continued to claim me as a brother. For example, in Chicago, I went to a drama school where there were only 4 black people. And as much as I tried to be different from other black people, the events, the racial turmoil, the period continued to push me or propel me towards the African-American community that embraced me, didn't look at me different.
And it's through the African-American community that you learned about slavery?
Oh, yeah. It's that community and my association with it that forced me to really consider it as a serious event in Africa.
When you say that although African Americans embraced you, you wanted to be different, in what way did you want to be different?
Well, by being an African, by being originally from Africa, but continually declaring I'm not part of this Americans that are not presented as people to aspire to be. Most economically, the status they have in America is not attractive, and you want to continue to disassociate with them to claim your Africanness, and so it was a major, at least on my case, being in theater, being in drama, being in the art and literature, it was a great deal of crisis that if you were trying out for a play, you would be cast as an African-American bum on a bench with the rest of the African-American actors. And here you're trying to say I'm different in the middle of all this racial text. And also the other point you have to know is I was not from economically advanced family. I had to come to America and do gardenings and work odd jobs, and in so doing, the discrimination, especially outside Illinois, doing gardenings and in Evanston, where I was located, also began to assault on me. The racial phenomena began to assault me. And so in doing some plays, even when I just came, before I even knew anything, I began to write about the racist things that were happening to me. Mm-hmm. In so doing, I found identification with the racial struggle, or at least the African-American side of the struggle. I start to begin to shout like them. I start to get angry like them. I start to want to do a very violent act towards people.
I guess you could say that your new movie kind of brings together your experiences in Africa and in America. It's part of the movie takes place in America, part of it takes place in Africa.
Yeah.
And it's about the abduction of Africans to America for slavery.
Oh yeah, that's the primary genesis of the story. It's very, very personal and very displacement and memory. And I didn't just want to stage it contemporary. I just want to take it to the past because I felt that's where the battleground took place.
When your film opens, there's an African-American fashion model who's on a shoot in front of some of these slave fortresses on the Ghana coast. And she is, I mean, she's just there in high fashion clothes doing her shoot. But she's transported back into time after she enters one of these dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
And when she's transported back into time, she experiences what slavery was like. Is that the experience you want your audience to have, to be basically transported back in time through your film and to connect with a past that you hope they think about more deeply than they have?
Well, I felt, you know, in most cases, the past was so significant in order to go forward. And so I would say, basically, you know, my interest has always been history is where you exorcise most contemporary problems. And people, especially Africans and African Americans, have never stopped for a second to pay tribute and cry and exorcise this turbulent and very genocidal historical event that took place in their lives, where they have equally participated in that event. And so, to me, the exorcising is a prerequisite in order to even go forward. And that, I realize now, at whatever level people are, come out still with that whole event being a sort of exorcising or a healing a platform.
It's interesting that you're using the words exorcising and healing. One would think that the emotion you would leave with after seeing a film on slavery is anger. But you're not talking about anger, you're talking about healing.
Every time my film shows, in most cases, we have somebody from the film crew present at the end of the film talking to people. In Baltimore, many young people are bused to see the film. We have 3, 4, 5 people who are instructors to talk to them and put everything in context. What we've seen so far is that most of them are saying, for example, a young man wrote me saying when he sees Hollywood films about slavery, he is always out angry and wanting to do something bad to people. And he says, seeing your film, I felt centered, I felt strengthened because I felt my people struggled and fought tooth and nail. And to me, I think that's the general response people have towards this film.
Because it emphasizes the struggle against slavery and
yeah,
rebellion?
Yeah, because what you say, what you have here is, in most cases, even within the Hollywood context, most attempts about slavery inherit the grammar of plantation interpretation of slavery, where Africans were devoted to be slave. They didn't complain. They were happy. They danced. Everything they did was presented from a plantation owner's perspective. And so what you have here is a film that says, you know, the African race negated the whole idea of slavery from day one, and they fought to the best of their ability, tooth and nail. And I think that's a very important even point to raise, because most of the stories are polluted by making us dependent. Africans are always standing, waiting for Europeans to come, and then we just pick cotton or coffee or cut sugar for them, and life is for them. And we are just, we even sell ourselves in some movies to free masters who are in trouble with gambling. And this whole idea of false devotion that negates basic human notion. Wanting to be free and resisting slavery is a human notion. And the climate and the literature and this whole Hollywood cinema has always denied black people to make history, including contemporary movies like Mississippi Burning, where they are just in the outskirts of their own chapter, their own history.
A couple of the characters who you focus on in Sankofa are head slaves on the plantation. They're the slaves who've been assigned to be in charge of disciplining the other slaves, making sure they're working quick enough, whipping them sometimes as punishment. And you focus on these men as being in the position of both the tormented and the tormentor, and just the terrible predicament they're in. And I'm wondering what particularly drew you to their predicament.
You know, if you slavery cannot be left to the omnipotent power of Europeans, I think the participation of Africans as head slaves, slave drivers, is a very important point for me. as one of the principal characters who originates from Africa. Nunu says, you know, the tormentor has always been, I mean, the head slave has always been my tormentor. And I think black people have always been betrayed by head slaves and certain representative translator figures, guides. And so in the story, that part, that's part of the drama that takes place within the context of that experience.
I'm wondering, though, if you think that, like, the head slaves almost had no choice. I mean, it was to be in that position or be killed, probably.
No.
No, you think they rose to that position by...
Yes, by, you know, the compromise is basically also a human texture.
Mm-hmm.
So it's natural to compromise. But at the same time, there are also choices. For example, they could, the way it happened historically, some of them will be with the master in the daytime. At night, they'll be meeting the field hands to be part of the rebellion. I mean, Denmark Vesey's 1832, Nat Turner's, tells you these are head slaves that worked within the underground movement to develop the insurrection.
What kind of problems have you had getting your film Sankofa distributed nationally?
Most of the American distribution companies, from small to big, viewed the film and refused to show it. On the basis of saying that blacks will not go to this movie or Americans would not go to this movie.
How do you interpret that? Because I mean, your film is not exactly a commercial looking movie in the way we think of mainstream films. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't look like a major motion picture in terms of the amount of money that you see on the screen, in terms of big name actors, in terms of action. Do you know what
I'm
saying? It looks like an independent film.
You're right. From an ordinary point of view, that you can say that. But inside, when you fight inside the industry, as I do, I think even let's say we were that what you described. If we were white films, we would be given a chance to try the market, like Piano. Piano is not a commercial film, per se, from your explanation of what commercial is. Though I think commerce in America is race-based. The racial factor is very important. Try to take money to produce a movie. Try to go to the bank, ask for money to buy a house and be black. I think, to me, you know, commercialism is just a euphemism to hide most liberal racist people. And I think I have seen them act with sophisticated words where they tell you it's not commercial. And they, on the other hand, they open Orlando. They have opened many white filmmakers that I think are, in the definition you give, not commercial.
You know, it seems to me something you would be up against is a preconception that African-American audiences turn out more for films about the hood or, you know, for action films.
But that's not true, because if you come in the audience, you'll see church people by bus coming in telling you in the audience they haven't been in movie house for 10, 15 years because they're tired of being insulted by that industry. They verbalize it to you like that. It's young, desperate kids who are making movies. But what about the simmered black people in Hollywood? They are always preempted by racism. They're never allowed to make film about their grandmother. Yet you'll see a white film about ordinary people. You'll see a film about Piano. You'll see a film about Crying Games. And then people bring this false marketing facts on you, because that's how racism is hiding now. But I want to say this to you. I think in this century, in the 21st century, black people are not going to anymore fight the dukes and the skinheads and Buchanans. Black people have to reconfigurate to ask liberals where they are now, where they stand from, and not take their research, their computerized facts as a fact. Racism is hiding in the closets of liberal people in Hollywood, in industries, radio stations. And so to me, this is what angers black people.
As a filmmaker, you're a storyteller. You grew up in Ethiopia, and I know your father was a playwright there. And so I guess he was a storyteller, too. I mean, somebody
yes,
who...
Yeah.
yeah. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about his work and what the role, what his role was in Ethiopian culture. I don't know if it's more of a written or an oral culture.
It's a written culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's the oldest written language. My father was educated on Ge'ez, which is the equivalent to the Latin in the European context.
Uh-huh.
And he comes up with a tradition of drama that has been handed down for a generation. And I worked on his plays as a young kid. I used to act. I was underneath this whole drama, not knowing in the sense that when I discovered cinema and Peace Corps and America, I didn't have value for my father's work. Though I was nurtured at an early stage, which is the saving grace I have now, I then began to be derailed and want to be just American.
You were educated through Peace Corps schools?
Yeah, I was the first generation of that whole Peace Corps program in Ethiopia.
So it was mostly American teachers?
American teachers. Was initially I had Indian or British designed school, but still at least I think the American culture, the films and the teachers gave us a different program whereby we just wanted to become like them.
What did it mean to you to become like them? What was the themness that that you tried to emulate?
To hate my background, to look down upon my grandmother's story, to go look at John Wayne and Indians, you know, and to totally, it miniaturized my culture. And I was culprit in making, you know, that happen. I'm not blaming anybody, just that historical event just dislocated a whole generation, at least my generation, from an Ethiopian culture. All the traditional songs, all the traditional narratives, everything just was obliterated. And we entered just the cowboy and Indian world of America.
So what was your image of America from American movies? What were some of the movies that you really loved?
Well, mostly, really, at that stage, it is the, I would say, the short amount, you know, just the spectacle movies, the Audie Murphy movies, the John Wayne, Glenn Ford when they're killing Indians, or Tarzan when they were killing Africans. And
what was it like to see Tarzan movies in Ethiopia?
Well, it's funny. When I came to America, I was sitting around UCLA with African students who, all of them, we thought it happened in their area because none of us believed it happened in our section. So we were arguing it happened in Nigeria, and the Nigerian guy says, no, it happened in Kenya and the Ethiopian. So we know it didn't happen near us, but it was a point where we were on the side of Tarzan. You know, we were on the side of the cowboy against the Indians. And we will be whispering and shouting when they will approach or come and, you know, creep towards the Tarzan character or the John Wayne. We would be whistling to tell them they're coming at you.
So you came to America in part because you loved Hollywood films. You had this image of what America would be like from your Peace Corps teachers. But at some point, there must have been a big change in your attitude about what America represented and what your home in Ethiopia represented. Is there a certain turning point that you could describe?
Well, it was in Chicago at the Goodman School of Drama. I was on a play. I was sitting there. Here I am in Ethiopia. I came from Ethiopia. I'd played major parts and things. And here I was. I was here with African Americans as a bench bum. And we were watching as Romeo and Juliet, the white people in front of us. And this was, I start to realize there was most of the African American actors were placed as just marginal excess, you know, excess things on the side. And I was having a hard time accepting this role. It no more became a play. You know, the theater shows you the exclusion. You can't go try for Hamlet. You can't even dare, or at least even secretly aspire to even try out for Othello.
Although America is obviously not the thrilling place that you had hoped it would be, it must still have a real pull on you and be of great interest to you because you've continued to live here for about 25 years now. So what is it that keeps you in America?
Well, I would say, you know, I have four kids and a wife, and but, you know, there are many things that are from Tom Paine to Paul Robeson to Angela Davis, David Thoreau. There's many good things about America. But at the same time, I think the country does not know race is the most dangerous hydrogen bomb underneath this country that is not attended. That's the tragedy. And people who try to generate this as an agenda are always silenced. From Lenny Guinier to Kwame Ture to Angela Davis, people who are trying to raise the issue of race are silenced.
You're talking about being silent, and yet it seems that there are more books and films coming out by African Americans than ever before, and perhaps more discussion about race and the issues of race than there's been in a long time.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it looks like that, but I think even in publications, it's what's allowed to be published. You know, I think you always have to know there are. If you see a Toni Morrison, then there's millions of Toni Morrisons that are not in. And I think the ratio, the proportion of neglecting so many voices, and also the selective process, who selects publications, you know, who selects what movies to be made. When you see a white film, you see a rainbow from Piano to Schindler's List. You see a whole rainbow of films in between all the bad and good. In black films, it's one piece of meat, and that is what you have to go for. And over, you line up in movies, and black people are, like even in our films, what was very sad for me is that the fact very few white people dare to cross over to see my film. That was a sad awakening for me, because I have always crossed over. And I think black people are big, very well-meaning crossover people to go see, line up so many movies that has no bearing to their even reality. So you see all these things. It gives you a different lesson. I don't think it's changed. I think it's getting worse, as far as I'm concerned.
Haile Gerima's new movie, Sankofa, is playing in Baltimore and opens Friday in New York. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.